density altitude is perhaps the single most important factor affecting airplane performance. It has a direct bearing on the power output of the engine, the efficiency of the propeller, and the amount of lift generated by the wings. When the air temperature increases, the density of the air decreases. Also, as altitude increases, the density of the air decreases. The density of the air can be described by referring to a corresponding altitude. That's why the term that's used to describe air density is density altitude. Remember that a decrease in air density means high density altitude, and an increase in air density means lower density altitude. Density altitude is determined by first finding the pressure altitude and then correcting this altitude for non-standard temperature variations. It's really important to remember that as air density decreases, the density altitude is higher, aircraft performance decreases. As air density decreases, or as density altitude gets lower, aircraft performance increases. Any increase in temperature, humidity, or a decrease in air pressure results in a higher density altitude, and this significantly decreases power output. The engine produces power in proportion to the weight or density of the air. So as air density decreases, the power output of the engine decreases. This is true of all engines that are not supercharged or turbocharged. The other thing is propeller efficiency decreases as the air density decreases. The problem with high-density altitude operations is compounded by the fact that when the air is less dense, more engine power and more propeller efficiency is required to overcome the decreased lifting efficiency of the wings. The additional power and propeller efficiency are not available under high-density altitude conditions. The effects of humidity are not considered when determining density altitude, but keep in mind that high humidity will decrease airplane performance. Wind has a direct effect on the performance of the airplane. A headwind will increase airplane performance by shortening the takeoff distance and increasing the angle of climb. During landing, a headwind will increase performance by steepening the approach angle and reducing the landing distance. A tailwind, though, will decrease performance at a significantly greater offset than the increase of the headwind. Tailwind has a much greater negative effect. Airplane manufacturers provide information in the form of charts and tables from which performance data can be obtained. Because all values are not listed on the tables and graphs, interpolation is often required to determine intermediate values for a particular flight condition or performance situation. Interpolation means to compute intermediate values between a series of given values. When performance is critical, an accurate determination of performance values is the only acceptable means to determine what the performance will be like. Prediction of performance is based upon a standard sea level altitude, sea level temperature of 15 degrees Celsius, 59 degrees Fahrenheit, and a sea level pressure of 29.92 inches of mercury. This combination of temperature and pressure is called standard conditions, or a standard day, or ISA, International Standard Atmosphere. Figure number 8, density altitude chart, which is used to determine pressure altitude and density altitude. Remember, in order to find density altitude, pressure altitude has to first be determined, because density altitude is pressure altitude corrected for non-standard temperature. The performance problems require that you take an altimeter setting that's given, an airport elevation, and an airport temperature, and derive density altitude. So here's an example. Let's determine the density altitude for the following conditions. The altimeter setting is 29.25. The airport elevation is 5,250 feet, and the airport temperature is 81 degrees Fahrenheit. If you look at figure 8, 29.25 is not listed on the chart specifically. There's a 29.2 and there's a 29.3, each of which has a corresponding value, pressure altitude conversion factor. The difference between the two values is 94. 47 is exactly halfway between 29.2 and 29.3. If you add 47 to the lower conversion of 579, or subtract 47 from the higher conversion of 673, you'll get 626. 626 is the pressure altitude conversion factor for the altimeter setting of 29.25. When 626 is added to the airport elevation of 5,250 feet, you arrive at a pressure altitude of 5,876 feet. The way to remember whether to add the conversion or subtract the conversion is to look at your altimeter setting that's given to you, and then determine whether you have to increase that setting to arrive at 29.92 or decrease that setting. If you have to increase the number to get to 29.92, that's a memory clue to tell you to add the conversion. If they give you an altimeter setting, such as 30.00, well, you have to reduce that to return to 29.92, so in that case, you would subtract the conversion. Once you convert airport elevation to pressure altitude, you can then go into the chart and use that pressure altitude value and corresponding temperature to exit the graph with an approximate density altitude and solve the question. Remember that pressure altitude lines are slanted, so an intermediate pressure altitude value will be found between the slanted lines, equal distant from the top and the bottom line. So I have a question. If it's necessary to change your altimeter setting from 29.15 to 29.85, what change occurs? Well, if you take the altimeter and you turn it from 29.1 to 29.8, the indicated altitude is going to increase. So we know it's going to increase in indicated altitude. What's the difference? If you subtract 29.15 from 29.85 and then multiply that times 1,000, that will give you the number of feet difference that the altimeter will indicate. To answer the question, if it's necessary to change your altimeter from 29.15 to 29.85, what change occurs? A 700-foot increase in indicated altitude. So, to review the two most important definitions, what is pressure altitude? Pressure altitude is the altitude indicated when the barometric pressure scale is set to 29.92. And what is density altitude? Density altitude is pressure altitude corrected for non-standard temperature. The cruise and power setting table on figure 36 can be used to forecast fuel flow and true airspeed, and that way you can determine the amount of fuel required and the estimated time en route. Here's a problem. Determine the expected fuel consumption for a 1,000 nautical mile flight under the following conditions. The wind is calm. Pressure altitude is 8,000 feet. Temperature is 22 degrees Celsius. And the manifold pressure is 20.8 inches of mercury. The solution is find the fuel flow and true airspeed. Enter the chart at the 8,000 foot pressure altitude line and proceed to the right and identify which chart segment represents an outside air temperature of 20 degrees Celsius at 8,000 feet. We'll use the chart ISA plus 20 degrees Celsius. So we use the ISO plus 20 chart. Now continue reading to the right. Note the manifold pressure of 20.8 inches of mercury. The fuel flow per engine will be 11.5 gallons per hour, and the true airspeed will be 164 knots. Now 164 knots for a 1,000-mile trip is equal to 6 hours and 6 minutes. If we took a plain old calculator and just went 1,000, divided by 164, the answer is 6.09. We can round that up to 6.1 hours, and you know that 1/10 of an hour is 6 minutes, so that's 6 hours and 6 minutes. You can calculate the fuel consumption by taking 6.1 hours times 11.5 gallons. You find that you've consumed 70.15 gallons of fuel. The landing distance graph is shown in Figure 38. This is used in the same manner as the takeoff graph. There's another type of landing distance table shown in Figure 39, but I found no references to Figure 39 in this year's question bank. So let's use a problem from the landing distance graph, Figure 38. The pressure altitude is 4,000 feet. The headwind is 10 knots, and the temperature is 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Determine the total distance required to land over a 50-foot obstacle. You'd enter Figure 38 at the point where the vertical 90-degree Fahrenheit line intersects the 4,000-foot pressure altitude line. From there, proceed to the right to the first vertical reference line. From there, proceed down and to the right to the 2,800-pound line, keeping the same proportion between the lines. From that point, proceed to the right to the intersection of the second vertical reference line. Since there's a 10-knot headwind component, go downward and to the right, keeping the same proportion between the lines, to the vertical line representing 10 knots. From that point, proceed to the right to the intersection of the third vertical reference line. And finally, go upward to the right, keeping the same proportion between the lines, and follow the diagonal line for the 50-foot obstacle. Then continue to read the landing distance, approximately 1,775 feet. All other factors being equal, taking off into a wind improves aircraft performance. It also reduces the length of the runway required to become airborne. The stronger the wind, the better the aircraft performs. Crosswinds, on the other hand, may make the aircraft difficult or impossible to control. The aircraft manufacturer determines the safe limit for taking off and landing with a crosswind and establishes a maximum crosswind component. The graph shown in Figure 37 is used to determine to what extent a wind of a given direction and speed is felt as a headwind or a crosswind. Here's a problem. The wind is reported to be 090 degrees at 30 knots. You plan on landing on runway 9. What is the headwind and crosswind components? Well, the wind is 090 at 30. You're landing on runway 9. What is the difference between the wind and the runway? It's 0 degrees. So the headwind component in that example would be 30 knots, and the crosswind component would be 0. If the wind is reported to be 115 degrees at 30 knots, and you plan to land on runway 9, now what are your headwind and crosswind components? Well, you determine the angular difference between the wind direction and the runway. 090 degree runway minus 115 degree wind is a 25 degree difference. Find the intersection of the 25 degree angle radial line and the 30 knot wind speed arc on the graph. From that intersection, move straight down to the bottom and read the crosswind component. And from that point, move horizontally to the left and read the headwind component. The crosswind component is 13 knots, and the headwind component equals 27 knots. A takeoff distance graph, such as Figure 41, allows you to determine what your ground roll will be for takeoff under various conditions. It also shows the total distance required for takeoff and climb over a 50-foot obstacle. Here's a problem. Determine the distance required to take off over a 50-foot obstacle. The outside air temperature is standard. The wind is calm. The pressure altitude is 4,000 feet, and the takeoff weight is 2,800 pounds. You locate the standard temperature on the graph. It's the ISA curve, the ISA curve. From that point, you draw a line to represent a pressure altitude of 4,000 feet. From that point, you go to the right to the reference line. At the reference line, you proceed downward proportionally to the vertical line representing 2,800 pounds. From there, you draw a line to the right to the second reference line. If you had a headwind now, you would proceed down and to the right, remaining proportionally between the existing guidelines. But since the winds are calm, the reference line is also the vertical line representing 0 miles per hour wind component. So from there, draw a line to the right to the third reference line. From there, go upward and to the right, keeping the same proportion between the lines, and follow the diagonal line for the 50-foot obstacle. Finally, move to the right and read the distance of approximately 1,750 feet. The airplane's weight and balance restrictions must be closely followed. The loading conditions and empty weight of a particular airplane may differ from that found in the airplane flight manual or pilot's operating handbook because of modifications or equipment changes. Sample loading problems are found in the airplane flight manual or pilot's operating handbook, and they're intended for guidance only. Each airplane must be treated separately. Although an airplane is certified for a specific maximum gross takeoff weight, it may not be safe to take off with this load under all conditions. The conditions which affect takeoff and climb performance, such as high elevations, high temperature, high humidity, high density altitude, all require a reduction in weight before flight can be attempted. The other factors to consider prior to takeoff are the runway length, the runway surface, the slope, the surface wind, and the presence of obstacles. All these factors may require a reduction in weight prior to flight. Some airplanes are designed so that it's impossible to load them in a manner that'll place the CG out of limits. These are usually smaller airplanes with seats, fuel, and baggage areas located near the CG limit. These airplanes, however, can be overloaded in weight. Other airplanes can be loaded in such a manner that they will be out of CG limits, even though the useful load has not been exceeded. When you do a weight and balance problem, you're looking at two things. You're looking at the total weight of the airplane to find out whether it's within limits. In other words, is it under or over its gross weight? And you're finding the balance point or center of gravity and determining whether that point is within limits. Remember, the CG is a point where all the weight of the airplane is considered to be concentrated. It's the point at which the airplane rotates about its three axes. Well, for an airplane to safely fly, the center of gravity must fall between specified limits. In order to keep the CG within safe limits, it may be necessary to move some weight toward the nose of the airplane, which moves the CG forward, or move some weight toward the tail, which moves the CG aft. The datum is an imaginary vertical line from which all locations in an aircraft are measured. The datum is established by the manufacturer. It may vary in location between aircraft. The arm is the horizontal distance measured in inches from the datum line to a point on the aircraft. If measured aft toward the tail, the arm given is a positive value. If measured toward the nose, the arm is a negative value. The moment is the product of the weight of an object multiplied by its arm, and it's expressed in pound inches. A formula that's used to find the moment is expressed as weight times arm equals moment. The moment index is a moment that's divided by a constant, such as 100 or 1,000. The reason it's usually divided by 1,000 is so that the number is a manageable number, and it's used to simplify the calculations where the heavy items with long arms results in gigantic and unmanageable numbers. Center of gravity is the point where all the aircraft weight is balanced, and it's expressed in inches after the datum. The center of gravity is found by dividing the total moment by the total weight, and the formula for finding center of gravity is total moment divided by total weight equals CG, inches aft of datum. Forward and aft limits must be located for safe flight, and those are called the center of gravity limits. These limits are specified by the manufacturer. The distance between the forward and the aft limit is called the center of gravity range. If an airplane is loaded in such a manner that the CG is aft of the aft limit, one of the undesirable flight characteristics would be difficulty in recovering from a stalled condition. Loading an airplane to the most aft CG will cause the airplane to be less stable at all speeds. Let's look at how we work a weight and balance problem. The empty weight is obtained from the aircraft manual. It includes the airframe, engine, all of the equipment that's installed in the airplane, as well as the unusable fuel and all the oil. The empty weight is obtained from the manufacturer's charts. It includes the airframe, the engine, all the equipment that's installed in the airplane, and it also includes the oil and the unusable fuel. The useful load includes the pilot, the passengers, the baggage, and the fuel. Some aircraft include all oil in the aircraft empty weight, and others don't. The takeoff weight is the empty weight plus the useful load. The landing weight is the takeoff weight minus any fuel used. Standard weights have been established for a couple of items that are involved in weight and balance calculations, and you need to know what these are. Fuel is 6 pounds per gallon. Oil is 7.5 pounds per gallon.